That was really good. That was really good. We're like already in rhythm. Thank you so much for being here. Do you mind reading the email you sent me almost 10 years ago?
Yes, this is so insane that I'm about to read this. Okay. Hi, Megan. My name is Aline Kazarian, and I am a 23-year-old Los Angeles native. I find myself at a really interesting time in my life. I graduated from Art Center College of Design in December of 2013 from the illustration department, and now I'm working in the music industry as a graphic designer and creative director.
When Aline emails me, it's 2015. Barack Obama is still president. Bruno Mars, Uptown Funk, is number one on the charts. And Aline is holding her degree from a prestigious art college right outside of Los Angeles. Her dreams are coming into focus. She wants to merge her love for music and art. She wants to be a creative director, helping musicians with their visuals, with their album covers. But as her career goals are coming into focus, life at home is becoming more blurry.
My parents got divorced after a 20-year marriage, and it was messy. I was never close with my father growing up, so I had to navigate through school and this life-changing experience that was happening with my mom. My mom and I alone had to sell our large house in Burbank, repay loans that my father had built up, and then find a new place to live. We spent a week living in a hotel, which ended up being difficult to continue due to financial reasons.
They moved out of the hotel and into her grandparents' one-bedroom apartment. For 4 months, Aline and her mother slept on the floor until they could get a loan from the bank and purchase a condo. When the divorce between her parents happened, the weight of her new life with her mother financially fell to Aline.
During that same year, in March of 2014, I got my first job after 3 months of unemployment. The job came to me, actually. I hadn't even applied. It was a music venue, and I was ecstatic because that's all I wanted, was to be in the music industry. Let's just say working there for 8 months as a graphic designer before being laid off was quite an experience. I found myself unemployed again and again during the holidays. I felt like I had let my mother down. Each day was scary. I was worried about my financial situation with my mom. She doesn't work, so it's all on me. And that kept hitting home every day, that I'd be on my computer applying for jobs and not hearing back from too many. I'd cry, but then I'd remember that I have my mother's strength in me, her willpower.
Aline didn't give up. At the end of the letter, she tells me she landed a job at a music management company as a graphic designer and creative director.
There is so much more I can tell you, but I'll end it here. Thank you so much for your time in reading this, Megan. I hope we are able to connect someday.
And here we are.
So crazy. So crazy.
You're listening to Dear Millennial, Navigating Adulthood One Question at a Time, Today, Now, and Then. Short stories from our listeners where we look at where they are now and where they were then. I'm Megan Tan.
Show out, finesse, See the way I'm moving, they gon' never forget, That's the way you do it when you're living your best. I settle for less, never that. We don't do that, no way. Show out, Say less, A number uno, I'm pursuing and forgetting the rest, Following my groove and it's gon' tell us what's next. Excellent, so don't ever test, cause I'm acing it,
Today, when you're financially responsible for your parents, how do you continue to go after your own goals?
I'm the one you want around. I'm the one you want around. Number one, the talk of the town.
Adobe Express makes it quick and easy to create everything I need for my business. From social posts to TikToks and flyers, all in just a few clicks. Get Adobe Express for free. Search for Adobe Express to find out more.
Sitting quietly once you've made the house all shiny. Downtime can be just fine playing bangers from the 90s.
Tea break, lunch break, maybe listen to the ad break.
Sometimes it's not time for some tombola, right? It's enjoying lasagna time, chilling with a book time, or time to visit your nan time. Go on, play some other time. Put your phone down. Tombola. Open for fun. Terms apply. 18 plus. Gambleaware.org.
Thank you so much for writing all those years ago. I have so many questions for you. One of the first ones, though, is how would you describe yourself at 23?
Scared.
In what way?
In a lot of ways. I think scared in terms of, like, if I were to think about my career at that time, I, you know, going to school and a school that sort of prepped you for a corporate job and security, financial security, job security, like all of these things. And then I'm out in the real world and I'm applying to these jobs and I'm seeing in fine print that, you know, you can be laid off at any point in time for no reason. So I'm like, okay, no job security. So that's making me feel scared. I had started dating at that point, really, but I was also scared about actually seriously starting to date because I didn't really know where to start. I never drank, so I knew that like going to bars was not going to be a thing for me. And I didn't really know how else to meet people outside of just at work, you know, or like through friends or something. And I did not want to bother with dating apps whatsoever at that time. So I think I was just scared in a lot of different ways because my brain was still developing at that time. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you're still a child at that time. So
I know. It's so weird. Yeah, you think you're so grown, but you're still like such a baby.
Yeah. And you spend so many years growing up wishing that you were an adult. You know, you see the older people in your life as a kid and as an adolescent, and you just so wish that you could be in their shoes. And then when you are, you just want to go back to being a child and not having any worries, not having to think about anything, or, you know, it's crazy.
So what has happened in the last 10 years?
So at the end of the email where I had written that I was working at that music management company, I worked there for a year and a half, and then May of 2016 rolled around, and I remember getting pulled into one of the manager's offices, and it's so funny to me because whenever your boss or manager or somebody tells you to close the door when you get into their office, you know that something is going to happen, and so I immediately started getting very nervous. And I sat down and he just very quickly told me that they are in fact going to let me go because they are starting to, you know, lay people off. And he was like, we're just not going to be needing your services anymore. So again, I felt like, you know, this was the second time I was getting laid off. And the first thought that came to mind was, I've just let my mom down again, you know, because I was the sole breadwinner. I, you know, my mom didn't work. And so I felt like everything was just on me to make sure that I was making money, to make sure that we were able to pay bills and pay back loans and all this other stuff. And I shut down after I got that news. And thank goodness at the time I had a really close friend named Nilu who also worked there with me. And she just sat outside with me afterwards when I had gotten the news and they basically just told me to pack up and leave. She just sat outside with me and just comforted me that entire time until I felt okay enough to get in my car and drive back home.
So growing up, did you know that your mom had mental health challenges?
I didn't know what it was as far as like an actual name. You know, I knew growing up that my mom was sad a lot of the time. And so that I think I just got used to because that's all I ever saw. That's all I ever really knew. But I didn't know what, you know, having depression was. I didn't know what having anxiety was. And then many years later, her being diagnosed, like properly diagnosed with bipolar 2 disorder, you know, I didn't know any of those things as a kid. And my family too, they never did any sort of therapy. There never were any sort of conversations around those types of more sensitive topics. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up in an environment that was supportive, but supportive in a different way, not in the let's face this issue, let's try and get you into therapy, let's try and, you know, get you to see a psychiatrist, that sort of thing. Like those things just didn't happen. And so my mom, essentially, she has a cousin who is a practicing psychiatrist in New York, and she would just have phone calls with him. And he basically became kind of her doctor, but like wasn't officially her doctor. Mm. You know what I mean? Because he even said, you need somebody who's based where you live, not I can't be that person for you. Mm. But just as a cousin to cousin type of, you know, as a family thing, like he wanted to be able to help. So no, I had no idea what any of it was. Mm. It was just my mom was sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did she ever have a job when you were growing up as a kid?
No, she was a stay-at-home mom. She worked up until really the last month of her pregnancy, and then she just stopped. And it was, I think that was more of my dad wanting my mom to be, you know, a stay-at-home mom. And it was this sort of traditional way of, you know, growing up where my dad was going to be the breadwinner and my mom was just going to be at home and take care of me. So yeah, she stopped working after she had me.
Okay. Yeah. When your parents did get divorced, then you essentially assumed a lot of responsibility, right? Did you and your mom have a conversation about that when that was happening, that you would assume that responsibility? Or how did you assume all of the responsibility?
You know, there was never a conversation. It was, at the time, everything felt like we, both my mom and I, were just on autopilot. We were just trying to get through everything that was happening post my parents' divorce.
Right.
The house I grew up in was a big house in the suburbs, and we no longer needed that. And my dad had refinanced on the mortgage so many times that, you know, by the time my parents were able to sell the house, it just, like, the majority of the money went towards paying off that mortgage. And so we had to very quickly empty out that house after they found a buyer. And imagine having to move out of a, I think it was a 5-bedroom house where it's just the two of us. And then my mom's parents would try and help occasionally. You know, they were older, so they couldn't do a lot of the heavy lifting type of work. So no, there was never a conversation. It was just, we were both on autopilot and we were trying to just put the pieces together, essentially, and try and start a new life, even though it was incredibly difficult. And because of what happened between my parents, you know, my dad was on a restraining order. So it wasn't one of those types of divorces where it was, you know, kind of a peaceful transition, so to speak, where my dad could jump in and help with the move. It really was just the two of us trying to pack everything up and get out of there and then live at my grandparents' 1-bedroom apartment for as long as we had to until we were able to find, you know, where we live now. So yeah, autopilot.
How did you decide that you were going to take on the responsibility of your mother?
I don't think it was really one of those things where I sat down one day and I was like, you know, I have to do this. I think it's sort of innate. It's my personality. Mm-hmm. You know, I like caring for people. I oftentimes care a little too much. You know, it gets to the point where it almost is painful for me because I am so empathetic and because I do end up taking on so much. So it's so strange when I think about it now. It feels like it was just yesterday, but it was literally over 10 years ago. And it's just wild how quickly time goes by.
Mm-hmm. I know. Time waits for nobody.
Yeah. No, it does not.
It waits for nobody. Do you feel like you have to choose between your dreams and also taking care of your mom?
I don't know if this resonates with you at all, because I don't want to, with what I'm about to say, I don't want to speak for everybody, but I also think there is something different in terms of just culturally as well. I think having grown up as an Armenian, it isn't necessarily that there's this sort of like expectation that you are going to be your parents' caretaker. But I think it's just sort of ingrained in the way that you grow up. And so it just feels normal. It doesn't feel like an expectation. It just feels like a normal part of growing up. And at some point when you're an adult and your parents are getting older, you know, it's just this thing of like, well, of course I'm going to help them. And of course I'm going to be there for them. Mm-hmm. Did I have the option to find outside support and pay for it? Of course I did. But it didn't make sense to spend money on those sorts of services when really my only focus was making sure that there was going to be food on the table.
Right.
You know, because again, I wasn't making much money. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's one of those things where I've never felt like I've had to choose between either my own career and my own life or taking care of my mom. They've been one and the same, mm-hmm. essentially. They've played out at the same points throughout my adulthood. And so there's never been this question of, well, I'm just going to completely forget my mother and just, you know, move on and do my own thing and just not have anything to do with this. And sure, it's going to be expensive, but I'll hire somebody to help my mom whenever she needs it. You know, it's just, it's so ingrained in me to be that person and to just be there for the people that I love and take care of them when they need it. Mm. So my mom has definitely, you know, she's not the type of person who isn't understanding and doesn't realize that it is difficult for me as well. It's not just that she's the only one experiencing a difficulty in her own life, but that, you know, those difficulties can also affect your loved ones and the people mm-hmm. who live with you. And, you know, she's been very accepting of that and realizes that. So mm-hmm. I don't ever feel like I am being forced to do anything. I just want to make that clear.
Sure.
That is not something that my mother makes me feel whatsoever. Mm-hmm. It is a choice that I've made to help her. And I understand that it is a lot, but I also find ways to balance out my own sanity. You know, like I know I can't just keep taking on more and more things without having to set aside time for myself on any given day, even if it means going out for a walk. It's just, I need to have that moment for myself to really keep things going.
How have you been able to create that space for yourself?
A lot of it has been, I mean, it's not anything crazy, to be honest with you. Like, it's simple things like just going for a walk every single day. I've been going on even longer walks recently where I'll go on like 2-hour walks in different neighborhoods that I haven't been to before. And, you know, LA is a city that, you know, it's dependent on having a car. It's a big city. So I have always loved the moments where I've been able to just walk on a street and feel like I can actually experience the city, you know, firsthand rather than just being in my car and feeling like I'm, you know, numbed out to everything and I just need to get from point A to point B. You know, it really slows things down for me. So that's really one thing, is like exercise and just moving my body is super important for me. And I've noticed the days where maybe I get a little bit lazy and I don't go out on that walk, I start to feel the feelings, you know, like it really starts to kick in. Another thing that keeps me sane, really, is reading. I've always loved reading. I'm a huge fiction fan. And so I try and read as much as I possibly can. And then with my love for art too, it's like I will carve out time to just make work for myself as well. Mm-hmm. I know that there is this responsibility that I have for myself of, well, I need to reach out to new prospective clients and I need to do these things in order to, you know, find more work. But I also know that I need to stay creative and staying creative for me, at least one of those ways is just making work for myself. So those are some of the ways that I stay sane.
Wrapping paper? Check. Tape? Check. The Big Tasty? Big check. After all that Christmas shopping, why not treat yourselves to the Big Tasty from McDonald's? With or without bacon? Go on. You deserve it. Available until the 5th of Jan. Serve from 11 a.m. Participating restaurants only. Subject to availability.
So, you want to be a marketer. It's easy. You just have to score a ton of leads and figure out a way to turn them all into customers. Plus manage a dozen channels, write a million blogs and launch 100 campaigns all at once. When that's done, simply make your socials go viral and bring in record profits. No sweat. Okay, fine. It's a lot of sweat. But with HubSpot's AI-powered marketing tools, launching benchmark-breaking campaigns is easier than ever. Get started at HubSpot.com/marketers.
Do we really need another computer? One that's faster, more powerful? Not everyone does. But to reinvent music using a neural processor, work off the grid with all-day battery, or bring your vision to life with AI-powered co-creator, then a Copilot Plus PC can make a difference. A powerful AI computer is not for everyone. But if you're trying to change the world, even if just your own, we built one for you. Microsoft Copilot Plus PCs powered by Snapdragon. The fastest, most intelligent Windows PCs ever. Battery life varies with usage and settings.
One reason why I'm like chewing on this kind of question about like, how do we support the people who are super close to us while also going after our dreams is because, you know, working in the creative industry myself, I used to be really career driven, you know, just like so ambitious and career driven. But now that my father lives with me, you know, my parents are older. They're like in their 70s. My dad's like 78. I feel like I'm like in a new chapter of life. I'm like, how can I find a job that just supports my family? You know?
Yeah.
And I like this shift feels new for me, you know, because it used to just be my dreams, my dreams, my dreams. And now I'm like, I want to be responsible. I just want to make sure we're good, right? And so that's why I guess I was wondering for yourself, you know, because the creative industry is so hot and cold and very unpredictable, how do you create that stability within your own self for you as you take care of your mom as well?
I, similarly to you, have always been very career focused. But in thinking in that way, I've always thought of it as, well, that's going to be the thing that's going to offer me the kind of stability that I want. And as you've said, the creative industry is so hot and cold that it's almost impossible to feel like you can find any one job and have that be the sort of stabilizing factor, because I think things have just changed generationally so much, you know? And so gone are the days where, you know, like our parents' generation, where people would work at one job for one company for essentially their entire careers.
Sure.
And so now it's the polar opposite of that. And, you know, what's interesting too is that I actually recently had a conversation with someone where I was like, you know, basically any job I've had, any full-time job I've had, it's been like a year, year and a half, you know, maybe getting close to 2 years. And I'm like, it really just makes me feel like I'm not doing enough, or that I'm not enough, or like, why does it feel like I'm on an assembly line? Like, why does this keep happening? And the person I was speaking with, they're like, no, but you have to realize, like, that's just how things are now. That's kind of the reality we're living in. And that's actually great that you worked somewhere for a year or a year and a half. And I'm like, really? Because it doesn't offer that kind of stability that I always thought that jobs were supposed to offer.
To do, yeah.
You know, I don't think that.
Do you find yourself craving that though? I, as I get older, I'm like, I'm just craving
stability.
Yes. Yeah.
I've craved stability since I was like 22 in my career. So yes, absolutely. I crave stability.
What makes you not just like change careers though?
See, I have had that inner dialogue this entire past year. And I've thought about it's, I'm telling you, there's just something in the air because a lot of people are our age are experiencing the same thing.
You feel so.
And look, for me, yeah, because I've had a number of conversations with people who have come from a similar background. They've gone through the corporate, you know, system and they've kind of done it all, seen it all. And they are just at a point where they're like, I'm sick of it and I just want to do my own thing. And, you know, that's easier said than done. But I think there really is this shift in the way that people are thinking about what job security looks like, what being treated well at a job looks like, mm-hmm. what being paid well looks like. But to answer your question from earlier, yes, I crave stability. And the way that I have sort of backtracked myself from having that inner dialogue of maybe I should just go to school again and just study something else. Maybe I really should go into medicine, you know, because that at least is stable. That's like the only stable job you can have is working in medicine or maybe being a lawyer, you know?
Yeah.
I don't really know of any other stable jobs. And then there's this whole other part of me that's like, but that's not what I ever wanted. And I can't even imagine myself working a job that I'm not excited about. You know, like, sure, medicine is something I'm interested in, but am I crazy about it to actually go and study it and then, you know, become a doctor? No, it's just not me. I know how empathetic I am, and I just don't have that personality where if I'm in a situation and I have to go and tell a family member that their son or their daughter or whoever, you know, just died because, you know, we couldn't do anything more. It just is not me. I cannot do that. It would literally stay with me for the rest of my life. And I don't know what I would have done with myself. I don't have that sort of personality where I can turn it off, you know, and move on and not bring that energy with me to the next patient. Mm. So yes, there has been that inner dialogue for this entire year, but every time I've just come back to the thing that I love to do so much, which is, again, that blend of the visual arts with music. And I can't see myself doing anything else. So I have to maintain this level of, I think, just unabashed hope. I feel like so much of what I do is for my mom. I do obviously think for myself as well, but I've always had this dream, as silly as this may sound, but I've always had this dream of being able to buy my mom, like whatever her dream house is, to be able to buy that for her in my life. And so I feel like the types of conversations that I have with my mom about my career specifically, for instance, she feels how frustrated I can get. And she's also a very empathetic person. And so she understands how, no matter what I'm doing, no matter what angle I'm taking, no matter how many people I'm meeting with, no matter how many interviews I'm doing, it just, for whatever reason, nothing seems to be working. You know, she sees that frustration and she understands it. But I think because she hasn't had that firsthand experience of working in the creative industry ever, I think it's a little bit harder maybe for her to truly understand what is going on just in my inner dialogues that I have with myself. So she's understanding and she's still very supportive. And she's honestly probably more hopeful than I am. She's really the person that, you know, when I'm down, she really is trying to uplift me and to remind me that, you know, it is going to get better. It will get better. Like, she seems to have this sort of inner understanding and this, like, I think she has like an all-seeing eye or something. I don't know what it is, but she seems to truly believe that something great is going to happen in my life. And
wow.
I will take that.
Yeah.
I will take it.
Wow. Your biggest champion. Yeah.
Truly has always been. And that's why I said even earlier, she always supported my love for art. She put me in art classes from, I think, the age of like 8, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah, she's always been my biggest champion, for sure.
That was Aline Kazarian. Aline is a creative director whose goal is to help musicians create visual campaigns for their upcoming projects. You can find Aline's work on Instagram at Aline Kazarian. She is a longtime listener of the show. If you have a question that you want Dear Millennial to try to answer, you can call 442-444-0756. That's 442-444-0756. And leave a voice message. You can also email me at hey@millennialpodcast.org. That's hey@millennialpodcast.org. Also, I'm doing this totally independently, so if you would like to support the next chapter of Millennial, you can become a member. Go to patreon.com/dearmillennial. This episode of Dear Millennial was written and edited by me, Megan Tan. Amore Yates is the senior producer on the show. It was engineered by James Rollins at Roof Dog Studio. Our theme song is by Jupiter. Ashley Wittenborn created the artwork. Make sure you follow, like, and subscribe to Dear Millennial wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow me on Instagram at Megan Lee Tan and the show at Millennial Podcasts. Dear Millennial is a Tan Lines production.